You're listening to the Transform Your Nutrition Podcast with your hosts, Rebecca Heald and Jeff Ash. Our purpose is to help individuals and families transform their relationships with food and develop healthy bodies, minds, and attitudes, all without restriction, guilt, or shame.
But anyway, it's the first time we've gone live with our episode. We normally do chat, don't we? We normally do an episode on a Friday podcast, podcast episode, but today we've decided to go live, and I think probably because we it's such an important topic, isn't it? And very timely in terms of it being Children's Mental Health Awareness Week, so or Children's Mental Health Week, and we want to promote awareness around it. Now, one thing I do want to say to anybody who's listening, anybody who's watching on the replay, you know, Jeff and I, we're not mental health experts. This really is just a conversation from, you know, our own experience and kind of our own thoughts on the topic. So please do, you know, chip in if you want to, if you want, if you've got any comments whatsoever. And yeah, because it'd be really, really great to get some conversation going. But yeah, I guess, where do we start, Jeff?
That is a great question. I mean, I know both of us have experienced various mental health related things in our own families. I mean the topic in general is important. Yesterday, I was on someone else's podcast, which was very, very interesting because I was asked to come on and with a panel of people who were all experts, and then me. in the area, but it was a very good conversation because I think the important thing with these mental health awareness weeks and other kinds of awareness weeks is that it just sparks conversations. And I think all of us can really talk about these different things from our own perspective. And we don't have to be an expert in order to talk about the impact of mental health on ourselves, what we've seen in others, what we've seen in our children, diagnosing and treating, totally different things. So take anything that we say is from what either of us have said we've done or in our own families or found helpful with a grain of salt, because it could just be a very individual thing since neither of us have any kind of formal training in mental health.
I do want to point out I have got a background in education.
Well, exactly.
You know, I'm a former teacher, so not that that qualifies me in mental health, but I know a little bit about children. You know, and kind of how to pick up on the triggers, etc.
I think it does in many ways does qualify you to talk on the subject and even offer insight and advice kind of on a one-to-one basis with just people in general. Myself too, I was a children's pastor for 5 years. And camp counselor and camp director, so the same kind of thing. You just on the job, I guess, kind of training and learning in many ways.
Yeah, definitely. And I just think it's so great to just kind of raise awareness around this topic as well, especially right now. You know, everybody is, you know, most people are struggling with things right now. We're in a, you know, we are kind of experiencing, you know, stress, anxiety, trauma, perhaps on different levels. And I think that's a really good point to make as well, is that very often we talk about trauma, and I don't know about you, but trauma often feels like a big and scary word. And it's almost like, you know, trauma feels like it needs to have been something really, really significant to have happened. But actually, you know, trauma is about something that has created stress and anxiety or in a person. And, you know, nobody can say whether or not that situation or that one-off situation or that ongoing situation or that one event, you know, nobody can minimize that, if that makes you know, any sense at all. And trauma, you know, it's not just about experiences. It can also be about personal identity as well. You know, people experience trauma through harassment, through bullying, through racism, through weight stigma. You know, it's something I think that is so, so prevalent, yet so misunderstood.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's something that I think it's really easy for us to overlook. And I know myself personally, before I really had wrapped my head around mental health to any kind of a degree, I approached it very much like I think a lot of people do, which is, you know, if you're dealing with something mental health related, then almost like in dieting, you know, eat less and move more when you're trying, when you're struggling with obesity or your weight. And same, I would sort of approach mental health in sort of that same way, which was, you know, if you're depressed, well, just find something that makes you not so sad. You know, it just very, you know, a very twisted and complete lack of understanding of what mental health is, what trauma is, what people are dealing with when they're going through depression and anxiety. And in many ways, it took losing my first wife to, in death, to suddenly realize, oh, that's what depression is. that's what people who have just come out of an abusive situation are dealing with. Because my first marriage was very abusive, verbally from my wife toward myself, and then also our children. And then later I found out there was a significant amount of physical abuse from my wife in a very secretive way. And the mental abuse was even exponentially higher than what I realized. But yeah, that it often it takes us going through it ourselves to really realize just what the impact is.
Do you know, the thing is, and Karen's just commented actually saying it starts with hello, and I just want to make a point about that. But I think, and hi Karen, thanks for joining. But I think, you know, with trauma, it's really, really not easy to identify, because everybody copes and deals with trauma in different ways. And I've seen that, you know, in my own family. You know, we've dealt with, before the pandemic, you know, we've been through trauma, we're still coming out the other side. And I've seen how all three of us, you know, myself and my two boys, have reacted in different ways to this. So, for example, my son, he's reacted by going into what I call shark mode. Okay. Mm-hmm. So he has become angry. He's become frustrated. It's his way of coping. His way of coping is by being loud and angry and, you know, and really it's just a camouflage for the fear and the anxiety that he is feeling. Then you've got my other son who went into tortoise. He kind of recoiled. He went into his shell. He became withdrawn. That was his way of dealing with it. And then you've got me, who I'm dealing with my own trauma, and I am just like a whizzing dart. Is the only thing I can kind of, you know, I literally just was keeping it constantly, as you know. You know, I was throwing myself into anything I could to not deal with the emotions. It was easier to be busy than to face what I thought was really, really scary in terms of the emotions and also I did that because I felt like I needed to be there. I had to be the strong one. I couldn't deal with my trauma until I dealt with my children's trauma. And actually, over time, I realized that that was the backwards way of looking at things.
Exactly. Yeah.
But, you know, I think what's really, really important is, no matter how we're dealing with it, it was about the dynamic. You know, we're three different people dealing with things in different ways. And initially, I reacted. Okay. I wanted to react to it. I would react to Leo. I would react to Luca. Like, why is Leo behaving like this? Why won't Luca talk to me? Why, you know, but it's not, you know, sometimes it's not about reaction, is it? It's about connection. It's about, that's the thing I want to say about what Karen mentioned. It starts with a hello. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's not a kind of, you know, what are we going to do about this? It's connection, isn't it, at the end of the day? And I realized that if I was going to help my children through the trauma, I needed to take a step back and connect and meet them at where they were at.
Yeah, absolutely. I think as parents, it's really easy for us to let our pride come in the way when we're dealing with children's mental health, because none of us want to acknowledge that our child is struggling with mental health, because who does that come back on? Many of our minds, okay, if my child is depressed or has anxiety or is struggling with something, then as parents, we often take that on ourselves. If our child's not eating well, we sometimes take that on ourselves, and it's very easy for us to come at it from a pride standpoint. I've seen this in the school system. I'm sure you have too, where a child needs services. They need to be in a special education program, but the parent is like, my kid's fine.
Yes.
They don't need that. They don't need to see a counselor or us ourselves. I'm a strong person. I don't need to go see a therapist or a counselor. And I know myself, that was a big wake up call when my first wife passed away. I ended up going to a counselor, and that was a very life changing experience. And it was something that, you know, a close friend had advised me to do. And at first I kind of went in reluctantly and ended up just an amazing experience. And it helped me work through things much quicker because I actually was dealing with them at the root of it instead of hiding that. But coming back kind of to kids, those conversations are just so important. And it's so important to be open to those things and to put our pride aside and say, you know what, my child's dealing with something. I need to address that. And, or ourselves too, I need to address that.
I found, yes, Harry, it's also a reflection. Do you mean a reflection in terms of how we're dealing with things or reflection in terms of kind of how we respond to things? Because I think sometimes we can, you know, react to things because we're in survival mode. And I think actually in order to grow and to move on, you've got to take a step back and reflect and think. And I had to do that. I took a step back and I really reflected on what was going on. And I was like, you know, if I carry on like this, I'm, you know, if I carry on responding, if I carry on reacting in survival mode, we're going to keep going round and round in circles. And I think, yeah, there was something that you mentioned there as well. I've lost the train of thought now because I was responding to Terry's point about it being a reflection. And I think, what was the point you made, the last point you just made there, Jeff, about...
Well, I was talking about pride, kind of being open to.
Yes, to, that was yeah. it. Sorry, that was it. Because I also want, yeah, and that's absolutely it. Because I was kind of almost trying to force Luca, like, why won't you talk to me? What's going on? You know, and it was, and I realized then that, you know, children don't talk, do they? They do. Okay, so I found that I had to be curious. I had to start kind of like doing things that Luca enjoyed, meeting at him where he was at, rather than keep, you know, I tried, you know, we went into therapy, I got them to do some therapy on their own. We did some group therapy, but the best thing was when I kind of, you know, really, really took a stock of what was going on for me and stopped trying to push and just got curious. And I think, this was the point I wanted to make as well about what you've said, because I saw this, you know, I worked and, you know, work in education. I have done, you know, for 15 years, ex-teacher, and, you know, used to come across this quite a lot, as in, you know, parents were refusing to acknowledge or accept what was going on with their children. And again, it's not about trying to push things on parents or force things on parents. It's about being curious and understanding. Because the other thing is that there is a reason. There's always a reason for a behavior. There's always a reason. There's always, you know, there's something underneath it all, isn't there? And, you know, it's the same in the coaching that we do with clients. You know, their behaviours are a reflection, back to what Terry said, they are a reflection of what's going on underneath, of our experiences, of our beliefs, of our values, you know? And this is the other thing, you know, very often children also experience trauma because there is a misalignment of their beliefs and their values. If we're trying to push them one way that doesn't sit with their gut, and I know we speak about a lot about this when it comes to nutrition and about developing trust in our children's body, you know, it can actually be traumatic for children if we're taking away that trust and we're not allowing them to deal with that. Does that and it's about, you know, how do we help our children, Jeff, kind of go from kind of, you know, auto-regulation to co-regulation to then self-regulation?
Yeah, those are great questions. And Darren said very good points. What would you say are the warning signs? Some, for example, will say, oh, it's just kids, teenagers. So what strong signs to look for? And that kind of builds off of what you were talking about there. I think that one of the things that we have to do is ask those questions and look for the root cause. Because I think really what happens is the warning signs are a change in behavior.
Yes.
You have a happy, a well-adjusted, outgoing, well-spoken, joyful child who just seems to love life. And then there's a change that occurs, and maybe they become withdrawn. Maybe just something changes in their behavior. It could just be a phase they're going through as children are growing up, but it could also be a sign of some kind of a trauma that's occurred. And often we address mental health issues as discipline issues. And I know that I've been very guilty of that myself.
Definitely. In the early stages, I remember you know, it was not long after, I don't want to go into everything that can, you know, but it was in the early stages. Yeah, definitely. I was just like, I cannot cope with my children. I don't know how, you know, so it was, you know, it's like, I just need to discipline them. And we were just going around in circles. I was just exhausting myself. And just, you know, actually, you know, adding to the trauma that my children were already experiencing or had already experienced. Sorry, but I put it in there. Carry on, Jeff.
No, those are just such great points. I mean, that's something that we have to be so aware of when it comes to general mental health. It's something we have to be aware of when it comes to nutrition, which is where both of our expertise lies. And all of these different areas, it's just amazing how what damage we can do when we address issues without going to the root cause. So you have a child that's withdrawn or that's beginning to act out in school or something, and then you start addressing it with, you know, stop acting that way. And then, but if you really stopped and dug down, you find out, oh, there's somebody that's bullying them at school, or maybe they've been sexually molested or something by someone, and we just overlook that and say, oh, well, they're just acting up, or they're not a good kid, they're just a bad kid, they have an anger problem. We sometimes minimize these things or overlook what's actually at the root of the cause, and so we're addressing the problem in a completely wrong way. And I've done that with my own kids. You know, we had one of our kids she just wasn't as outgoing as the other one. And so we treated her in a different way and we addressed it in a different way, when in reality, it all went back to the abuse that she was experiencing from my wife. Yeah. And it also went back to things that we've actually now found out underlying that are biological that she's working through now. And I won't go into detail on her because she's not as open as my other one. My older daughter is like an open book to the world. So I may bring up something about her because she loves to talk about it. She loves when I share about it because she loves how she's dealing with it. My older one was very outgoing and she was always trying to connect with other people. And that was sort of her way of dealing with it. Without rambling on too much more, I think that's one of the key things that hopefully, as we talk about children's mental health awareness, is that we need to be aware of what's really going on and address anything, whether it's a feeding issue, a behavior issue at the core, rather than trying to treat the symptom, which is, I want you to behave properly. I want you to eat the way that I think you should eat. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. How well does that work for us as adults? And we're the one.
Stop trying to micromanage your diet. Stop trying to micromanage your weight. It doesn't work in life. Why do you think it's going to work with your nutrition? But anyway, some really good points that have been made there as well, Terry, about saying sometimes not sweating the small stuff. Yeah, again, it is choosing your battles, isn't it? And with Leo, a lot of it, with my youngest, a lot of it was, you know, and the thing is that, you know, he was desperately needed, he wanted attention. That was his way of dealing with things, and whether it was positive or negative. So by dealing with the small things negatively, I was just fueling the fire. And Adam made some great points as well about negative versus positive. Because at the end of the day, children learn our language and our behavior as well around our children. That's what they learn. They don't learn from us telling them to do X, Y, Z. Okay. It's like me. I'll hold my hands up when I was, really in the thick of it and really, really was struggling. You know, I would shout at them. I would shout at them. And I'm not saying that I never shout now. I'm not going to say, but at that point, and because they were like, "Mummy, you never shout. Why are you shouting?" And then I'd be like, "Stop shouting. You're not allowed to shout." But I was mirroring that behavior.
You're shouting at them to not shout.
Seriously, that's how it was at one point. And I think my point is that, you know, we have to model and we have to demonstrate and we have to show children. It's the language we use. It's the way that we conduct ourselves around children. That's what they learn. I mean, you know, this is getting a little bit personal now, but like my ex, well, soon to be ex, hopefully, you know, he would talk to me in one way. And then when the children mimicked that, he would then tell the children off for talking to me in that way. yet he was doing it. And so they, you know what mm-hmm. I mean? It was just confused messaging, and they would just copy him, just like they would copy me. So it is about how we, you know, and we teach children through what we say and what we do, don't we? Sorry, that was a long way of going around it, but.
No, we really do.
About this better understanding of children, absolutely. And this is my real bugbear in nutrition as well, in nutrition education. You know, we know how children's brains develop, so we need to meet them at where they're at. And yeah, absolutely a better understanding. But it's also, you know, a better understanding of children, but also understanding that no children are the same. You know, I got an education background. I like to think that I do have quite a good understanding of children. Mm-hmm. But when it's your own children and they're very individual and they're very different, it is sometimes difficult, isn't it? You know?
Oh, yeah.
And this is why I talk about this being curious, meeting your children where they're at, trying to explore how it is, you know, how is it that they're feeling? If they react in a certain way, try and understand the feeling and the emotion that's driving that. You know, we've worked really, really hard in terms of creating safe spaces in the house. We've got safe space where the children can go and regulate. We've got things like worry monsters where the children can, you know, kind of put their worries, like take their worries and kind of put them aside. Yeah, that's been really, really powerful. And, you know, just getting children to express their feelings, I think, has been so powerful for us.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. That's been one of the things that has really helped. Both of my kids have expressed that to me. One of the things that's really helped them as adults, because my oldest daughter, she went to counseling soon after my first wife passed away, and she's been very open about talking about it. So I gave both of them permission. Not that I had to, but specifically, explicitly permission from the beginning that I know that you guys weren't allowed to say anything negative about what was going on in the house when mommy was alive, but now you have free rein. You can tell anybody anything you want about me, about what you experienced, about what you're going through. Yes. And I said, as long as it's truthful and as long as you're not exaggerating it, but you can express that to anybody you want, or you can, and come to me and tell me exactly how you're feeling. And then now, you know, my oldest, she was much more talkative about it early on from the beginning. And so she's talked about it for years now because it's been since 2010. And my youngest, it took her quite a while before she was willing to actually start talking about it and dealing with it. And so both of them are still. Yeah. And that is. And they're both very, very different. I mean, they are night and day different kids.
Yeah.
But anyway, coming back to that, I've had some really hard and painful conversations with both of them, especially my youngest, this past year, as I've allowed them to completely express exactly how they're feeling. I told them I wanted to hear what anything that they needed to point out to me that they felt I had done that disappointed them, that I had done that had hurt them also. And so that's been a very healing kind of a thing for them as well as me, as hard as it is for me to hear. And I think as parents, a lot of times we don't want to hear it. And because we are struggling and not wanting to deal with our own issues anyway, but it's so important as a parent to be willing to listen to your kids and hear what they have to say. Because when they say you've done this, this, and this, and that hurt me in this way, a lot of times parents will then become defensive and say, oh, no, that's not just, you need to just move on. And it could be a very small thing. Like, you used to make me eat my green beans and I hated green beans, and the parent will just blow it off as no big deal. But you know what? That's actually that's a traumatic experience for a small child. And that we deal with that in when we're coaching people on dealing with nutrition issues. And when you start to understand it and actually work with people, some of these seemingly minor little stupid things seem, you know, in our head, we think of them as stupid little things. They're actually very significant.
Yeah, I think that's really important as well, because that's where it comes down to the whole, if we minimize how our children are feeling, we're almost telling them, how you're feeling doesn't matter. I'm bigger mm-hmm. and I'm better than you. You need to listen to me.
Right.
You know, rather than acknowledging that actually that was pretty big for that, you know, for my child. That was something significant mm-hmm. for them. You need to acknowledge that and meet where they're at with that, don't you? And yeah, that's definitely something I've learned as well. And interesting that Terry mentions as well other influences, because that's a big one as well. And we definitely see that from a nutrition perspective as well, don't we? In terms of, you know, I create a certain environment at home, but then they go to school and they learn other things. And it's about being up positive and being upbeat and not ever, you know, kind of, yeah, I guess kind of, you know, not trying to auto-correct everything all the time, I guess.
Right. Yeah, well, yeah, and we can fall into that trap of commiserating. And there's a difference between listening, understanding, trying to hear them out, showing empathy, that kind of thing, and then just sort of feeding on the negativity. It's very easy. You know, you get into a conversation with your friends and it turns into just a complaining session where everybody's just like complaining and feeding off each other. And, oh, yeah, my mom did this. Oh, yeah, mine did this. And you just sort of build on it. It's very easy to do that. And anybody who knows me personally knows that I'm sort of an eternal optimist, and I'm always giving everybody the benefit of the doubt, and I'm always trying to look on the bright side,
That's why I love being around. Selfish positivity.
Yeah, I try. I'm not always successful, but it annoys my kids too sometimes, because they've said the same thing where you're always playing devil's advocate. You're always giving other people the benefit of the doubt. You're always this, but they also appreciate it too. So, I say that because I do see that when you try and look on the bright side of things, it can often be very helpful. When you're doing that, and that's honestly through this pandemic, and I guess I'm kind of changing the subject a little bit, but through this pandemic, which has been very traumatic for a lot of people, I'm really hopeful that the experiences that a lot of our, for lack of a better word, privileged and sheltered kids have not had to experience. I'm hoping that through this pandemic, as people are really getting sort of a wake up call, slapped upside the head, that they'll come out the other side and be able to take some of these traumatic things that many of them have been going through socially and intellectually and psychologically, and hopefully be able to be more aware of these mental health issues, be more open to talking about them, be more open to sharing their experiences with others who are going through it now, to help them get through it. Because that's so much of what we, as a community, as human beings, that when we're able to share our experiences with others and help them see that they're not going through it alone, that they're not the only one who has experienced that, that they're not the only one who essentially, I neglected my children for the first 12 to 14 years, because that's about how old they were, 12 and 14, when my first wife passed away, that I essentially neglected them by allowing them to experience what they experienced. Yes. I mean, it was horrible. To give you an example here, and there's just one example of one of the things that they went through, DMD. My late wife, and I never even heard this. I don't even know how I would have responded, but she actually went to them and told them that she got breast cancer because of their bad behavior. Now, she got through the breast cancer, and coming out the other end, when they would misbehave, she would tell them that if they didn't stop misbehaving, that she was going to get breast cancer again. So this is the kind of stuff that our kids go through. And so when I talk about, you know, how I've had to think about, I allowed my kids to go through that. But because of that internal optimism that I have and my willingness to say, you know what, I made huge, horrific mistakes in allowing them to go through that. But you know what? I can move forward from that.
Yeah, you have to.
I can now listen to them and allow them to share those experiences and not minimize them, and then move forward with that. So I don't know if that made any sense, but
no, it makes total sense. And it's really funny, actually. I started writing something. I knew we were going to be talking about this today. I mean, we only decided we were going to talk about this last night, didn't we? So
yeah, I know.
But literally this morning, I was reflecting on things, and I've started to write a blog on it. And one of the things I started to reflect upon was how I, you know, I feel exactly the same for the first few years of my children's life because of the, you know, the toxic environment that we were in. Mm-hmm. I wasn't doing everything that I could as a parent. I wasn't keeping them safe. And this mm-hmm. is why then they experience that trauma. And this is the thing, it's about how do you deal with trauma? What do you do? How do you, and fundamentally, you know, people have been talking about the signals and the signs and the coping. I've spoken about how all three of us coped with things. Mm-hmm. But fundamentally, it's about then reestablishing and making children and ourselves feel safe. Because, yeah. you know, I felt like I was just free falling. I didn't feel safe. The only way that I was then able to deal with what was going on with my children as well was by starting to look after myself again, you know, mm-hmm. starting to understand that I needed to stop running away from my thoughts and my feelings, and I needed to deal with them and get curious about them. And then when I did that, it then encouraged me to do that with my children. Mm-hmm. So it became more than just, you know, a tokenistic, because it's always like, yeah, you know, always reward the positive things, ignore the bad things, you know, and it would be, yeah, well done, I'm really, really proud of you, Leo, and then that would be it. Whereas then, it, you know, I started to get curious and be like, I'm really proud of you, Leo. Do you know how proud I am of you? How does that feel that mummy's proud of you? So that I was trying to embed all of the positive emotions mm-hmm. rather than it just being a tokenistic. It's a bit right. like equality and diversity. You don't just have a one-off, you know, diversity day in schools, that's right, you know, right. once a year, you embed it throughout the curriculum. Sorry, that's a bit of a analogy, but you know, and it's mm-hmm. the same with the children, rather than just tokenistic going, oh, I'm really proud of you, oh, really well done for doing that. It's about, let's really dig deep and, you know, really discover and understand how this is going to make you feel, how this is going to boost your self-esteem, how mm-hmm. this is going to make you feel safe and confident in your own skin. Confident that you can trust your own body, confident that you can trust your gut feelings, confident that you can trust what your mind is telling you. That's how we help children get through trauma, I think.
Yeah, no, yeah, I agree. And I think being open to seeking professional help is so important too.
Oh, yeah, and I did.
Yeah, and I think, and I'm not sure how it is in the UK, I know the NHS provides basically all mental health and health services to the entire population. Here in the US, if you're in a place of privilege like myself, where I have very good health insurance and I can seek out the best medical care and I can get it almost instantly here because of that. Others who are on what we have here called Medicaid, which is basically government funded healthcare, it takes longer. So they don't get necessarily the same level of care. They're limited on on who they can see for those things. But in any case, I think seeking out that professional help at whatever level you can is so important, and being open to it and putting your pride aside and saying, you know what?
Yeah.
And my child may need medication to work through this. There may be enough trauma that's gone on. And that was something I was very opposed to early on. My lack of knowledge, things like that. I was like, no, they don't need to be on any kind of medication. They just need to, you know, deal with this and, you know, those kinds of things. And, but just being open to whatever is necessary to help them get that mental health, those mental health issues dealt with, managed in many cases is the best that we can do. It not necessarily a cure kind of a thing, but managed well so that they can function well, in society and live that joyful life as much as possible.
Yeah, and it's so important. You know, trauma is, you know, it has such an impact. Like I said to you before, we can't minimize it because everybody responds differently. But the truth is that trauma does affect the brain. You know, it does.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, I'm no expert in this again, like I said, but I do know that it kind of, it's an intensified stress, isn't it? And it basically means that your right and your left-hand side of the brain aren't communicating properly.
Yeah.
But there are things as well. There are practical things you can do to kind of to deal with that. One thing I found with my children, sorry if I'm changing the topic a bit,
is a random conversation, essentially, with a loose topic.
Some things as well to leave people with, but kind of, you know, I found with my children that stimulating all of their senses, doing things with both hands, you know, really, really helped to regulate. Mm-hmm. For Leo, definitely, it really, really helped to regulate him. This is for younger children. Well, no, that can work for older children as well. Mm-hmm. Mindfulness, lots. I mean, there is so much out there now in terms of, you know, for children to support mindfulness and things like that. My Leo really has responded really, really well to yoga and things like that, which has been great. You know, mindful walks, that can be really, really good for teenagers as well as younger children, doing mindful mm-hmm. walks and trying to kind of, you know, get back and connect with nature and stuff like that. And for younger children, things like puppets and kind of, you know, role play, yeah. You know, I found that really, really, not so much for Luca. Luca's a bit older now, he's 10. But for Leo, that was really, really powerful in terms of, because he could kind of express, I remember some stuff, you know, we used to do loads of role play last summer because we had quite a lot of things happen at once. And then, you know, and I think, just role play without going into the details, mm-hmm. but you know, we used to do a lot of that in the garden, and he would pretend to be a shark.
Oh yeah.
Which is why I think shark mode is just sums him up all over. And I think I was a jellyfish or something, and he would role play things, and he would talk about clearly relating to things that had happened to him, but it was his way of dealing with it. Mm-hmm. You know, and like I said to you before, like things like gratitude jars, worry boxes, you know, we created a bit of a toolbox, all the things that the boys enjoyed that keep them mm-hmm. safe. We kind of put them in one place that they could go and regulate, self-regulate. Sorry, going off on one a little bit there with them. One thing that I, when I was doing secondary, one activity that I used once with there was a teenager who was struggling with things, and I caught them. We did a practical activity where, I can't remember where I got this from, but there was a shampoo bottle, and we kind of, did an activity where I was like, we squeezed everything out of the shampoo bottle really, and then tried to get it back in. Mm-hmm. And the point of it was, you know, it's so much harder to get things back in once you've kind of let them out. Does that make sense? So it's just a nice way of helping teenagers to kind of try and kind of be more curious and think mm-hmm. about things and stuff like that.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's, you know, it kind of reminds me of some of the things that have worked well for my older daughter, and she does a lot of journaling, that kind of thing, and writing. She has basically, she has used her Christian faith as a big driving force in the way that she has worked through and responded to a lot of this. And so she's started a ministry where she's really targeting teenage girls, college age girls, and of course she's kind of in that range herself too. She's 25, but and being very open to sharing what she has gone through, how it's affected her, how she's worked through it, listening to all these other girls talking about their experiences, and basically forming this sort of community of people who know they have someone there just to listen. Yeah. And she's not by any means treating their in any of the mental illness that some of them are dealing with, but just having a listening ear there, somebody who is willing to listen and try and understand, is so therapeutic for people. And having those different activities and being able to express yourself as you were talking about, and you know, with kids, those role-playing things, those activities, and often those activities, you know, I found working with teenagers and kids in different ways, you build that relationship where they trust you. Exactly. And then they'll actually come. I've had some teenage kids who just come to me with incredible things and children, because you're not being judgmental. You're not telling them what to do. You're just there as, you know, somewhat of a friend, obviously as an adult authority figure, like as a camp counselor, as a pastor, as a teacher, as a parent. It's not the same kind of a friendship level, but in many ways, there is that level of friendship and trust that develops to where then they're much more open to share what's going on, and finding people, finding a way to connect in that way can just be really helpful.
Yeah. Do you know what I always think as well? You know, be the rainbow in their storm. Mm-hmm. You know, if you can be the rainbow in somebody's storm, you know, that connection, that.
Yeah.
That can really, really help someone to feel safe mm-hmm. and feel connected. Yeah. It kind of also brings me on to a couple of things, actually, that I wanted to kind of hopefully touch on if we've got time. And one of them mm-hmm. is around routines and structure. Mm-hmm. When we spoke earlier, when we talked about dealing with behaviour and not kind of, you know, necessarily punishing, you know, all the time and stuff. And I agree, you know, it's like, you know, deal with the things that need to be dealt with and don't sweat the small stuff. But mm-hmm. having said that, children do need structure. They do need some discipline. They do need mm-hmm. some routine. It's good for them. That's how we help them to regulate. That's how we teach them. We co-regulate with them so that they can self-regulate. Yeah. And mm-hmm. so I think that's really, really important. But and also as well, I do want to kind of touch on a little bit about how trauma as well can lead to issues with nutrition and eating later on in life.
Yeah.
And definitely something that's coming up. Thanks
Terry,
for joining in. If you want to come back and watch the rest of the replay and comment, then please do, or just reach mm-hmm. out to us. I'm doing a podcast tomorrow with Adam. Jeff, so that'd be
great. I did last night. Yeah.
Yeah. So we would, you know, we want to continue this talk if we can. And about how, you know, I think these experiences can manifest themselves in the way that people then, you know, deal with their eating, their exercise, mm-hmm. their self-care and all of that. Yep. And they're the things that I'm dealing with. They're the things that I'm helping clients now to tackle because, you know, they weren't dealt with earlier on, if that makes sense. But mm-hmm. if that makes sense.
It does.
Like my
own it.
So just going back as well to how we can help children when it comes to stress, anxiety, to trauma, it mm-hmm. is to give them some structure, isn't it, and some routine. And I know we talk about this a lot when it comes to nutrition, but I think just in general, and I definitely know Leo, my youngest Leo, who is the one, you know, bless him, who goes into sharp mode, and he's got other things going on. Mm-hmm. But he that structure and routine has been pivotal in terms of helping him to feel safe.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. That just as another personal example, when my first wife passed away, my response to that was because of what they had been through, and as I was realizing just how bad it was, and sort of admitting to myself how bad it was, I kind of went the other way, and there was a lot. There was almost no structure at all for quite a while there of following that, and it definitely manifested in some problems that then of course had to deal with later. But that structure is so helpful, and kids, that structure makes kids feel safe. That's exactly. What's really interesting is a lot of times we think that the structure is controlling, and of course it can be, but we need that structure. They need that structure to thrive and to grow. And especially with their eating, you know, that's something we talk about. I know both of us, that's one of the big things we address with clients, and it's a key factor to effective child nutrition. It's like the first thing that you address when you're addressing feeding issues with children, or if you have a child who's experiencing some kind of acceleration in their weight gain or deceleration where a drastic decline in it, the first thing you do is structure. You don't even care what they're eating, like the what. It's like if all they're eating is McDonald's chicken nuggets and French fries, and that's the only thing, the first thing you do is you get structure in place, and then you start to work on other aspects of that. And often, our expertise is in the area of nutrition. And in nutrition, a lot of times, what do we do? We have this major problem, and instead of just instituting the structure, we say, okay, I need to cut out sugar. I need to cut out I need to go all organic. I need to do, and we just like attack it from completely the wrong direction. And we do the same thing with trauma. The kids experience some kind of traumatic experience, and it's manifesting itself in some kind of behavior. And so what do? We discipline and punish them. Yeah. we discipline and punish the kid for their behavior, instead of saying, you know what, there's something underlying this that we should probably address and figure out. And then the behavior comes along, and we see that with clients. You work with the underlying issues, and magically their weight stabilizes, or it comes back down to where their normal set point is, and those kinds of things.
Yeah. And actually, do you know what, that's, you know, does bring me on to a really important point actually about kind of managing weight. And mm-hmm. you know, now obviously, you know, 99% of clients that come to me have got aesthetic goals, they've got body goals, okay, mm-hmm. but I always say, you know, 99% of them, in fact 100% of them actually, have got, you know, issues with their relationship with food. Mm-hmm. And I always say, you know, the quickest way for you to get to your aesthetic goals is for you to heal your poor relationship with food.
Yeah,
because when you heal your poor relationship with food, you then are able to exercise consistency. You're able to know what it feels like and what you need to do to be at maintenance. Mm-hmm. And you also become so much more self-aware that right. you don't lose it around certain foods mm-hmm. that you feel that you can't control yourself around. So it's, you know, once you start to heal your relationship with food, you can build that consistency that means you reach your aesthetic goals. And I guess mm-hmm. it's actually the same with trauma. It's, you know, it is about dealing with what's going on underneath. If you haven't got a healthy relationship mm-hmm. with yourself, if you're struggling with that, then it's about how you deal with that. And what do we do when we're trying to build healthy relationships with clients, when we're encouraging clients to build healthy relationships with food? We get curious, we dig deep, mm-hmm. we're interested in the whole person,
right?
We're not just interested in setting them targets and giving them a rigid structure is important. And again, this comes back to structure with children. You know, it's important. And they will moan, but yes, they do feel safer with it. But also give them some authority in it as well. Give them a structure, but let them have some say in what that looks like. Mm-hmm. Let them have some, and it's the same with clients. You know, we give them structure, but then they build what that looks like.
Right. Yeah. When we're working with clients there, we let them come up with how they're going to work through many of these things. We offer recommendations, suggestions, but we then say, what do you think? What do you think is the reason that you're doing this? What do you think would be a good way of addressing this snacking issue that you have late at night? And they take ownership of that, and they have control over that and make the decision for themselves. It's helping people become autonomous, and that's what we want to do with our kids.
Well, I've got an example of this as well. About, this is going all over the place, I know, but when my children were trying to process, you know, it took a while of going through this, you know, this survival mode. We all mm-hmm. dealt with things in different ways. Like I've said, I had a shark, I had a tortoise, I had a blooming that was this dart going around everywhere. Gareth, really good point. Really, really good point, actually. Really, really good point. But I just want to say as well is that, you know, I was, boys would come to me and they'd be like, well, do you think X, Y, I don't want to go into too much detail, but it was like, do you think a certain person did a certain thing by accident? They didn't really mean to do it, mummy. And I was like, and rather than going, no, you bloody meant it, I'd be like, what do you think, boys? How do you, you know, what do you think? What do you actually think was going on? And they would always come to the conclusion, the right conclusion, but they were allowed to do that. I gave them the space and was mm-hmm. curious enough for them to reach the, and it's very much the same with clients, isn't it? We can often see what it is that they need to do. We can often see what steps they need to take, mm-hmm. but I don't know about you, Jeff, I always try and encourage them to come to that conclusion themselves.
Whenever possible. Yeah, those are the one, because that's when they come to the conclusion themselves, whenever we come to a conclusion ourselves, it's so much more powerful. And I think in making that change.
Gareth, yeah, sorry, some interesting points, but also worth remembering. Yeah, I totally. And do you know something? And I say this, and I have posted about this before, and I've been open about this as well, about how, you know, children are, my kids have been amazing. You know, they have been so much more tougher than I could have expected them to be. But I think all credit to you as well, though, Gareth, in providing that environment, you know, encouraging them to share, encourage them to talk about their feelings and discuss their emotions. I think that's so, so important in terms of them being tough and resilient in these situations.
Yeah. You
know? I think definitely. And it, sometimes it's hard. I know definitely in the beginning, I didn't create that safe space for my kids. I didn't. I was trying to deal with things I didn't know what else to do. And I was trying to deal with things by just putting a sticking plaster over it, you know, and not thinking about the long term. But when I took a step back and started to think, no, I need to, you know, and it's a process. It's been a journey. And my children, you know, we're still on that journey. Mm-hmm. But, you know, nearly 2 years down the line, they are a million miles on from where they were in the beginning, round in circles. But yeah, definitely.
Yeah. I'm going to read this since this is a podcast episode too, that we're going to be publishing. So Gareth basically said some interesting points, but also worth remembering that children are a lot tougher than we give them credit for. Speaking from experience, my daughter has had to live with losing two baby sisters.
I'm really sorry.
It was hard, but we have all adapted to it. And she is now one of the most grounded 10-year-olds I know. You must encourage them to talk about it and share their feelings and make sure they can discuss their feelings and emotions whenever they want. And yeah, so those are just such good points. I think it's important we understand that kids truly are resilient. They can change, especially the younger that they are, that when we put those changes in place, when we deal with them, it's much easier for them to make changes in the way that things have been. When they're older, it is more difficult, but they are resilient, and they can deal with these things if we address them head on. Like, you know, what you said there, it sounds like you've really encouraged her to be open with how she's feeling and that's been very healing. I think it's one point that I'll make that sometimes is a pet peeve of mine is that some people will minimize children's experiences by saying, kids are resilient. They'll get, you know, and I've heard that so many times through this pandemic where people are minimizing the experiences. Yeah. And so I think there's a fine line between saying, hey, you know what, they are, because they really are. We have to give them credit for and expect them to heal and expect them to grow and expect them to be able to adjust. But at the same time, we can't just assume that what's the big deal? They just didn't get to see their friends for a few months. They'll get over it. And it's like, or same with divorce. That's one of the things I hear from divorced parents a lot is that, oh, the kids are resilient. They'll bounce back from this. And they almost dismiss the whole idea of this separation of the entire kid's world from parents splitting up or the fighting that goes on with the parents in front of the kids. And they kind of are like, yeah, their kids are resilient. You know, they'll bounce back from this. And it's,
I had this exact thing, you know, and my kids, it wasn't just a breakup, you know, it's as you know, the ins and mm-hmm. outs, you know, far beyond. And, you know, so my children did experience a lot before, during, after, mm-hmm. You know, and I think, and that was exactly the thing there was, you know, I was like, my kids need counseling, they need support. And, mm-hmm. you know, a certain person was like, they're fine. They'll be fine. They're okay. And yeah, you know, like you said, Gareth, and like you've said, their kids are resilient, but you've also got to create the right environment, haven't you? And you've got to.
Yeah. You mentioned safety and security, Gareth, there. Those are great points. I think those are key aspects of that. Definitely.
They really are. Because when they, you know, it's normal, you know, when anybody experiences trauma, there is that disconnect. There is that, you know, you do feel like you do feel unsafe for a period of time. Mm-hmm. But if you can, you know, and this is what resilience is all about. And this is what I teach my clients, not just my kids, but it's what I teach my clients by being that support, by being that rainbow in the storm, by being that person who is connecting. You know, for me, the reason I get clients' results, if I'm honest, is because I have a connection with them. I've got mm-hmm. a relationship with them.
Yep.
I have that connection relationship with my children now. I didn't when I was going through my own stuff. I really didn't. But mm-hmm. since I've had that, that's how we encourage our children to grow. It's how we encourage them to be resilient. It's how I encourage my clients to be more resilient and confident. You know, mm-hmm. I had a session this morning with a client who is so much more resilient further down the line. And that is because, you know, it's about that relationship and it's about being curious and it's about providing that environment for them to grow, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah. Couldn't agree more. And it's great when you have when you're able to have those relationships with our clients, when they're willing to open up about these things, because it makes it so much easier to get down to those root issues, rather than just coaching them on what macro split or how many calories that they want to do. Not to diminish that work that some people do, and that, you know, there's all kinds of different ways to approach it. But at the same time, if you want long-term results in any area of life, and especially in nutrition and weight management and those kinds of things, really dealing with the root cause rather than manipulating external controls is going to be the way to see that success long-term. Because, you know, when it comes to weight loss, you can get somebody's weight pushed down, but if you don't deal with what caused the issues with weight stability to begin with, then it's just going to go right back to where it was. And the same with mental health, with our kids, with ourselves, as if we're not dealing with the root issues, where we can mask it. We can, we can get behavior in, for a time. We can change that. We can get that outward change to where we think, oh, okay, they're fixed now. The behavior has stopped. They're not acting out in school. They're doing their homework. They're back up to getting A's in all their classes. So I guess we fixed the problem. That's just not how it works.
Not how it works. You know, it's not, you know, I was a real messed up teenager for reasons, you know, on this podcast, but I was an A-star student. I was an A-star mm-hmm. student because that's why, you know, that's how I dealt with what was going on.
Yeah.
But anyway.
Yeah, sometimes the good behavior is actually the manifestation of the traumatic experiences, which is, again, since we're not mental health experts, I'm sure a mental health expert could unpack that and explain why that is. I'm just basing it on what I do, these observations.
We are only talking from experience, I think.
Exactly.
You know, I think that caveat does need to be there. So if we've said anything that, you know, is inaccurate or, you know, please do flag us up on it, because we you know, any feedback would be, you know, really, really kind of invaluable, I guess. Mm-hmm. Just like if anything resonated or rang true, we would love that feedback as well. You know, Jeff and I, I think really, you know, we're on a journey ourselves. We're learning mm-hmm. and we're developing as practitioners. We always will be. So we are open to that growth as well. And, mm-hmm. you know, and I think just to go back to what Gareth said as well, you know, it's about awareness, isn't it? And I think mm-hmm. by you, you know, your family, as parents being very self-aware, you've encouraged obviously your daughter also to be. So, you know, I mean, I can't even imagine what you've been through, but hats off to you, you know, it just shows courage, strength and self-awareness, doesn't it?
Yeah, well, likewise, you know, I haven't been through a divorce. I've not had to deal with that. And so it's a completely different, it's a completely different thing than losing a spouse. And I've even had friends who lost a spouse who they were extremely close to. So it was basically their soulmate, their life partner. And in fact, it was really interesting because when I lost my wife, I had a very close friend who had passed away 6 months to the day prior to her. And so his wife, you know, and I connected and were really able to lean on each other. It was really interesting because they had like this model marriage, this model relationship, and they'd been friends of ours for years. And then my wife and I had kind of the opposite. It looked good on the outside to a lot of people, but it was horrific on the inside. And so the experiences were so different. I was dealing with the abuse part and the loss of the spouse, because there was still that aspect. This person who I'd been with for 15 years was no longer there. But likewise, you know, like to give you an example, I cleaned out my wife's clothes probably a week after she died. I mean, I cleaned them out, sent them off. It was done. It was like pictures were coming down, you know, that kind of thing. My wedding ring was off within a couple of days. I wore it on a necklace for, I don't know, maybe a month or something. And then it was gone. This other friend, she's even a year later still had like his belt was hanging on the chair and, you know, those kinds of things. And those, nothing had really changed in the house. And so all of us, I guess I bring that up just to say all of us deal with trauma and deal with the experiences in a completely different way. You see people who were sexually abused as a child and it manifests in, and you know, the promiscuity in some, and it manifests in withdrawn and inability of having connections in others. And so you have
it manifests itself as well, you know.
Yeah,
clients, it can mm-hmm. manifest itself in, you know, in a poor relationship with food.
Yeah. So we have to, I guess my point in this is that with this whole mental health awareness thing, I think that's a key point to point out too, is that just we all deal with it in so many different ways. And there's no right or wrong way to deal with it. There's right and wrong ways to approach how we're managing it, I guess, but there's no right or wrong way to experience it. We all experience it in a different way. And that's, we can't say, well, my experience was this way, so your experience should be the same way. And it that's something we have to be aware of too.
Yeah, and that was the point I was trying to make before as well, about how, you know, I had a shark, a tortoise and a dart.
Yeah.
You know, and we were, mm-hmm. You know, and it didn't matter how we were dealing with it. It was about the dynamic and how I was going to mm-hmm. deal with that, I guess. Mm-hmm. Anyway, I have a client.
Yes.
So we are going to have to wrap it up.
Yeah.
If anybody, you know, is watching, has got anything they want to leave us with, or, you know, if you are watching the replay, please do type in hashtag replay and post any of your comments whatsoever. You know, and like I said, we really would love your feedback, you know, in any way, shape or form. If you don't want to comment on here, then please do reach out to us as well. Because, yeah, this is what it's all about. It's about... isn't it?
And if you're interested in listening to the two of us talk on a regular basis, we also have our Monday mornings that we go live and just talk about nutrition related stuff 99.9% of the time. And then we also have our podcast, Transform Your Nutrition. And you can find that on iTunes, Spotify, or any of the other platforms that podcasts are available. So we'd love for you to listen to us out there as well.
And just one final thing, I am doing a free webinar on Tuesday, just because it's coming up on Tuesday and you've made me think about that. But yeah, if anybody's interested, I'm going to be doing a free webinar on Tuesday that is going to explain a little bit about my approach, how I work, what is working with clients. It's going to give some practical strategies. And I've also got one of my amazing clients who I did refer to earlier, actually, who's going to be coming. And she's somebody who struggled, you know, she's struggled also, you know, kind of with things over time, but she's coming up, you know, completely coming out the other end. I'm going to talk about her journey and how it is that our relationship supported her to come out the other side. So
yeah, that's fantastic.
Yeah. I'll pop that in the comments for anyone who's interested. So yes, thanks ever so much, Jeff. I really enjoyed today's talk.
Yeah, me too.
A bit nervous about talking about things that I'm not really qualified to talk about.
Yeah.
Hey ho.
Yeah.
Thanks.
Well, we gave the disclaimer at the beginning, so it's official. You know, we can say whatever we want, and the people know it's just our opinion.
Exactly that.
Our non-expert opinion on this particular topic.
Yeah, but I think we did talk about this, didn't we, Jeff? And we said at the end of the day, this is about awareness.
Exactly. And exactly.
The more that we talk about this, and the more that we, you know, bring this to the forefront of people's minds, and the more that we can encourage that, the better.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Anyway, 4 minutes to go till my client. So I will love you and leave you. And
I'll
see you very, very soon. Enjoy the rest of the day.
Yep. Have a great weekend.
Bye.